Welcome to the Reality Deets podcast. I'm your host, Lara Sophia. Hey everyone, happy Thursday. I'm like, what day is it? I'm so deezed right now. So happy Thursday. Welcome to the, obviously, the Reality Deets podcast, daily dose of drama. Anyone else literally in a like Bravo hangover after this week? Like, I just am trying to just wrap my head around everything going on in the Bravoverse, and I'm just like, oh my God, I'm so overwhelmed. I'm so tired. I'm so just like, it's exhausting. Like, do you have in 1 week, like, honestly, I think the last few weeks we thought like, oh my God, having Summer House reunion, Pump Rules reunion, and the New Jersey reunion, plus Atlanta's airing, like, it's so crazy. It's wild. Then this week, like, Bravo just kicks it up another notch and gives us another show to have to focus on. And it's like, so we have the ending of the Summer House reunion, New Jersey reunion part two, which was freaking crazy and just like mind-blowing. Then we have Atlanta that aired on Sunday, which, to be honest, I have not watched the last like two episodes. It's just like, the first few I was not feeling, so I have not watched the last two. I need to catch up. That is a goal of mine for this weekend, but that's another story. So then, like, we had the New Jersey reunion on Tuesday. Then Wednesday, not only do we have the Pump Rules reunion finale, which is like epic and everyone is like dying to watch that, we also have the season 17 premiere of The Real Housewives of Orange County. And honestly, again, I'm just like literally in a Bravo hangover. I am just like so tired, and like, it's been like late nights, early mornings, trying to like digest all of the information that is out there about all of these shows and the scandal and the gossip and the tea, and it is just so much. And like, I live in New Jersey. I probably mentioned that before, but we're dealing with like all of the like New Jersey, Pennsylvania, I think like New York and stuff. We're all dealing with the smoke and all coming from Canada, from that like wildfire in Canada. And so like, literally, it's been like for the last like 3 days, it's been like apocalyptic looking outside, like where like the sun is like has this like orange haze around it, and it's like cloudy and it smells like smoke, and it's just like not really fun, and it's like weird, and like everyone's freaking out because they're like, oh my God, you have to wear a mask. And I'm like, I'm not going back to wearing a mask. I was happy to wear one during COVID. I don't want to wear a mask. Hopefully I never have to wear one ever again. But yeah, I'm just like, this week has been a hell of a week. And I think there's still remnants of the full moon too. So it's like, let's throw all of that together and create a whole lot of chaos. So yeah, this just, I am exhausted, but I'm so happy and excited to discuss the latest Bravo drama and news. First off, we're gonna recap The Real Housewives of Orange County. We're gonna recap Pump Rules. We're gonna discuss that bombshell that was dropped at the end of the reunion, which I think honestly production shouldn't have said anything because I think they overhyped it, and like the information that was revealed really wasn't anything new. Like, that had been alleged gossip. Raquel basically just confirmed it, so I think they like hyped it up a little too much. Like, sometimes it's just better to keep your mouth shut and let, you know, the reaction come from fans and let them decide if it is like really juicy information or not. So let's dive in to the recaps, and then we will do all of the daily dose of drama stories. And we have some really, really, really good ones today. Like, super good. Like, you don't want to miss these stories. They're that hot. On Wednesday night, The Real Housewives of Orange County returned for season 17. While I wouldn't say this premiere episode was anything like groundbreaking, it also wasn't boring. I think some premiere episodes, like every season, can be a little bit dull because it's like we're basically playing catch up with the cast and being introduced to the new people. And sometimes it feels more organic than other times. And I thought that the way they edited this first episode was really well. I felt like they introduced the newbie, Jennifer Pedranti. I don't know. Hopefully I'm pronouncing that right. But they introduced her in a really organic way on the show. I liked it. It wasn't like forced or too much or felt like fake and phony. It was good. And I think it helps that her friendship with Tamra Judd is actually real. So they have that connection. So it just felt, it felt all very smooth and like natural, and it all flowed together really well. So Tamra Judd is back for season 17. It's been two seasons since Tamra has been on our TV. Has it been two seasons or three? It's been three seasons. What am I talking about? Yeah, it's been three seasons since Tamra has been on The Real Housewives of Orange County. She got fired from the show in January of 2020. She technically didn't get fired, but she did get, she was going to be demoted to a friend of the Housewives. And at that point, she chose to walk away. So I guess semantics, depending on how you look at it. But Tamra, to start, Tamra Rebels, a lot has changed in her life since last time she was on the show. Her and her husband, Eddie, moved back to their previous home in Ladera Ranch. So they had bought in that new house. If you remember, it was like really big and really beautiful. But then during COVID, they got an offer that they couldn't turn down on the house. So they sold the house and they moved back to their previous home, which they still owned. And they were, I think, going to rent out as a rental property. So they moved back into that home, renovated it, and now, surprise, surprise, Tamra's mom is living with them. So we also find out that they're closing their gym, Cut Fitness, which is a little sad. And it seems that Tamra is a little bit worried about how Eddie is going to handle the closure of Cut Fitness, since the gym was really his baby. We also then catch up with Shannon Bedore and Emily Simpson, who have built this budding friendship, and they go on a hike together. The conversation quickly turns to Tamra because Tamra was recently in the press for bad-mouthing Emily. She called Emily an angry girl who was dancing on her grave when she got fired from Orange County. Shannon says she doesn't really want to be around someone who is nasty and can just fly off the handle and attack people like Tamra can. And Emily basically asks, like, what the hell happened between you and Tamra? Because, like, you guys were on such good terms when Tamra left the show in 2020. And it just is, like, so random that, like, your friendship just, like, turned sour out of nowhere. So, Shannon basically says, like, when Tamra left the show, they were in contact and, like, they kept in touch. But Tamra basically got really bitter that they, like, couldn't find time to, like, always connect away from the show. And that's Shannon's version of events. She then says that Tamra spent the next 2 years going on a media tour bashing her and claiming that she had a drinking problem, which we've all heard the podcast. Tamra literally spoke to everyone and anyone about Shannon and their friendship fallout and made all of these wild accusations about Shannon. And we all know Tamra at this point. I mean, I can't even count how many years she's been on The Housewives. Like, we know Tamara's behavior. Like, when she is hurt, she gets angry, she gets mean, she gets bitter, she crosses the line, she says too much. And then she later regrets it once she's, like, you know, had some time to breathe and really think about it. Despite the drama between Tamra and Shannon, Emily is actually hopeful that the two can, like, mend fences and repair their friendship. But Shannon is not sure. But she does make it clear that she is not going to hold back when it comes to Tamra. Like, she's going to speak her mind. Then we catch up with Emily again, and, like, more of her personal life. So, and we also see what's going on in Gina Kirschenhider and Heather Dubrow's life. So Emily's life right now, her husband Shane is now a working attorney. Finally, it's only been, what, 5 years? 5 seasons? I mean, I'm sure it's been longer that he's been working at this, but at least since they've been on the show, he's been trying to pass the bar and become an attorney. He finally passed the bar, as we saw in season 16, but now he is a working attorney. Go Shane, finally. So With Shane being a working attorney, Emily is now a stay-at-home mom, which is a very big role reversal because she was the, like, breadwinner of the family for so many years. And so Shane is gone working all day. So Emily is taking care of the kids, and she admits that she's struggling with the changing dynamics in her family, which isn't surprising because I feel like Emily is just, like, one of those, like, strong women who is, like, so independent and, like, just a go-getter and, like, you know, loves to be a girl boss and all of that. And I think she's probably really good at what she does. So I'm sure that it's a little bit of a, it's probably a big adjustment to go from being a working mom to a stay-at-home mom. And I think that people think, like, oh, being a working mom is so hard. And I think being a working mom is hard. It's a lot to balance. But being a stay-at-home mom, I think, is just as equally as hard, if not harder. Because at least with a, like, a working mom, you get time away, out of the home, away from the kids, that, like, little sense of independence. And, like, you know, self-fulfillment. You're getting, you know, accolades from other areas of your life. You're getting, like, praise, and, like, you're getting achievement outside of the home and outside of raising the kids. And I think with stay-at-home moms, you don't always get that, and you're often looked like, oh, it's such an easy job, you're home all day, like, all you probably do is take care of your kids and cook and clean. And but there's a lot that goes into that. And, like, I have family who they're stay-at-home moms, and they, you know, work just as hard, if not harder, as working moms. And I think we just need to praise whatever type of career moms choose to have, whether it's working or staying at home or a combination of both, or whether it's dads too. Like, we really, you know, let's give props where it's deserved, because being a parent, I think, is the hardest job in the entire world. When it comes to Gina, she claims that she is thriving in the co-parenting department with her ex-husband, but there seems to be a little bit of, like, issues going on in her life, which we'll get to later on in the recap. As for Heather Dubrow, she is playing nurse to her husband, Terry Dubrow, who is recovering from surgery after tearing his meniscus. The two are preparing for their oldest kids. They have twins that are, I think they're, like, 19 now, but at this time they were 18, Max and Nick, who are heading off to college. Naturally, the couple's very emotional about, like, the changing, you know, I guess, like, dynamic in their house. So, like, they have four kids, so two are going away. So it's almost like they're halfway to being empty nesters. And so it's a lot changing in their life. But Heather is feeling that something is off with her friendship with Gina. And we then get, like, a flashback scene between Heather and Emily. And Heather explains that she thought her and Gina were building this great friendship, but then, like, Gina just went radio silent out of nowhere. And Emily says she was in the same boat with Gina in the past, but, like, Heather tells Terry, she's like, I'm not going to put in the effort with Gina at the moment. And she's like, I'm seeing Gina out and about at events and things she's hosting, but, like, she's not inviting me anywhere, and, like, it's hurting my feelings. So she said she's not going to chase Gina anymore, and she's just going to let everything play out. We then meet the newbie, Jennifer Pendrotti, when her and her boyfriend Ryan go bowling with Tamara and Eddie. They're clearly really good friends. Tamara explains that she and Jennifer have been friends for years, and that Jennifer went to her and Eddie's gym, Cut Fitness, for years, and that's actually how Jennifer met her boyfriend Ryan. And so they have a really fun night out. It seems really great. And, like, Jennifer says she's hosting a party for her yoga studio that she has, and she says obviously invite some friends. And so obviously this is the way that, like, you know, all of the ladies are going to meet Jennifer Pendrotti for the first time. And it seems that some of them know each other already. Like, Gina knows Jennifer through Tamara. And, you know, so they kind of know each other, but I don't think they know each other very well. So finally, Gina calls Heather Dubrow, which Heather is pretty actually shocked about. So Gina calls to see if she can pop by Heather's, because she wants to drop off some gifts for Heather's daughter, Max, who is heading to Boston for college. Well, Heather's surprised, she is happy to hear from Gina. So Gina arrives at Chateau Chateau Dubreuil. And she like goes on and on about how much she's missed Heather and just tells Heather that she's been going through a lot of changes. Apparently Gina's studying to take her real estate license and so is Heather's son, Nick. Gina really doesn't like the comparison considering Nick is 18 years old, now 19. And Gina says in her confessional, she's like, I have 6 mouths to feed and 6 college tuitions to pay for down the line. And I'm like, 6? Girl, like, you have 3 kids. I know Travis, her boyfriend, has 3 kids too. So, yes, they have 6 kids combined. But it's like, I know you love his children and you probably think of them as your own at this point because you guys have been together a few years. You're planning a future together. But it's like, girl, you're not responsible for paying for his kids to go to college. Like, they have a mother. Like, they have a father. Like, you also have an ex-husband who is partially responsible. So why are you putting all this weight on your shoulders? Like, I really hope that Travis is as stressed out as Gina is about paying for his children to go to college. Like, I don't know. Like, something just seems off and shady. It's weird. But Heather just jumps right in. It's basically like, I haven't heard from you all summer. Like, what the hell? Like, she's like, I get that, like, summer's crazy and people are traveling and vacation and all that. But, like, you didn't send me one text all season, like, all summer. Like, you know, we got so close last year and then you basically, like, dropped off the face of the earth. Like, what the heck's up with that? And, like, Gina then, like, goes on and she starts, like, spewing all of this stuff. Like, she's basically, like, you know, giving all of these excuses. She's like, well, Travis didn't have his kids for a while, and then, like, that made my kids sad, and that made me sad, and then I was traveling back to New York, and, you know, she basically, like, word vomits and gives all of these excuses, and, like, literally, Heather is like, shut the fuck up, like, I don't really care, like, I'm not believing any of this, like, this is nothing to do with you not texting me or giving me one call all summer long, like, it's just excuses that like, they make no sense, and so Heather's antennas are clearly up, like, she's not feeling it, so it's like, what's going on here, girl? We then get to know the newbie Jennifer even more, so we finally go to Jennifer's house, which it looks like it's a new house that she's just moving into, and it turns out that Jennifer has a really unique life, like, super unique, guys, like, it's a little crazy. So she has a ton of kids. She has 4 sons that range in age from 16, 18, 13, and 9. The 9-year-old, she explains that her and her ex-husband adopted their 9-year-old about 5 years ago. They also have a 9-year-old daughter, plus 2 dogs, 2 guinea pigs, 2 fish, a cat, and 5 foster kittens. So it's like a partridge in a pear tree. And if you're wondering why I say her ex-husband, well, this is, like, even more complicated situation. So, Jennifer's ex-husband, Will, still lives with her, despite her being in a relationship with her boyfriend, Ryan. So, Jennifer tells everyone, she's like, okay, look, she is from Oklahoma. Her ex-husband is from Orange County. I'm assuming they met in Oklahoma, because that's where her family's business is, and her ex-husband works for her family's business. So after they met, and I guess they got married, they then moved back to Orange County, and then her ex-husband would go back and forth between Oklahoma and Orange County. Eventually, their marriage fell apart, and we will touch more on that in just a few minutes, so just hold on. And so instead of having the kids go back and forth between Oklahoma and Orange County, her ex-husband travels back and forth. So when he comes home to Orange County, he stays in their house and Jennifer goes and stays with her boyfriend. Like, what the fuck? This is, like, so crazy. Like, it's literally batshit cray. Like, what? But apparently, like, they're, like, moving boxes into the house and all, and it's, like, her ex-husband's stuff. Like, his clothes, his shoes. Da-da-da. It's so weird. But, like, and Jennifer admits the whole situation is very odd, but it's what works for their family at the moment. I mean, it's very odd, all of it. But Jennifer's boyfriend seems to, like, take it with a grain of salt and it finds humor in the whole situation. So, I guess to each their own. We then have Tamara and Heather. They reunite. They go and play pickleball with Gina. And it's weird because, like, going into filming for season 17, we knew there was, like, beef between Heather and Tamara. But, like, they're on camera right now and, like, they're acting like they're totally fine and there's nothing. But, like, they both said some shady shit to each other before starting to film for season 17 on their podcasts. So it's really weird that they're, like, brushing that under the rug and just acting like they're all good and they've never had any beef. So it's, like, weird. I don't know. So after playing pickleball, they discuss Jennifer's yoga retreat, and Heather says she's going to invite Shannon, and Tamara is, like, shocked, and she's like, Shannon completely ghosted me, and Shannon denies the claim that she ghosted, but, you know, Tamara basically is like, Shannon was not there for me when I needed her, and, you know, but Heather's like, well, I'm in a good place with Shannon, and Shannon's changed a bit, so I think you should give her another chance, and I think you guys can work through your issues. That's yet to be seen. But it's so weird that, like, Tamara and Shannon are on the outs, but then Heather and Shannon are in a good place because Shannon and Heather hated each other forever, like, forever, ever. From the moment they met, they did not get along. Like, it's, so it's funny how, like, things have come full circle and how relationships have changed over the years. It's finally the day of Jennifer's yoga retreat, and everyone gets arrives at the event, and Tamara and Shannon greet each other with a hug, but it is awkward. There is tension. They all start doing yoga, and of course Shannon Bedore is struggling, like, so much. I mean, we all know Shannon is not, like, the biggest exerciser in the world, and I don't mean that in, like, a negative way. I mean that in, like, every time she's exercised on the show she's, like, falling over or making noises or making comments or has no balance. So, like, it's just, like, funny. She's literally like Lucille Ball when it comes to, like, exercising. Like, do you guys remember that, like, booty blast class they took at, like, Cut Fitness years ago? And, like, it was the season where, like, Brooke's cancer scam came out, and they took that, like, booty blaster class, and Shannon, she couldn't run because she pees. Like, it was just really funny. And, like, the whole yoga thing reminded me of that scene, and I was laughing. So after the yoga, everyone kind of, like, you know, goes off, and, like, they're talking in groups, and you know, Gina tells Tamara and Heather that she's, like, Shannon just seems really chill, and Heather agrees, saying that she's, like, been like that lately. Tamara, of course, is like, oh, is she smoking pot to chill out? And they all laugh because they're like, probably, but, like, no big deal. Meanwhile, like, Shannon is chatting with Emily, Jennifer, and some others, and I guess the topic of marriage comes up, and, like, Shannon's like, I don't really feel like I need to get married again after my nasty divorce. And Jennifer then tells the group a little bit more about her history. So she explains that she got married at 25, and, you know, she moved to Orange County for her husband, and that her family, like, loves her ex-husband despite their split. Like, she even says, like, that her family could not understand why she wanted to get a divorce, and they even tried to do a few interventions to get her to change her mind about divorcing her husband. But she says, like, divorcing her husband was the first time she ever put herself first in life. And, you know, Emily, like, thinks that's great. And while she's being sweet to Jennifer's face in her confessional, she basically reveals that she's heard gossip that Jennifer cheated on her husband, and that's why their, you know, marriage fell apart and all of that. And it's like, damn, could you be any shadier, Emily? But I think the thing is, like, I feel like Jennifer has not revealed if she cheated on her husband, but I feel like she's alluding to it, and I feel like she's going to be truthful about it. Like, I don't think it's something, like, she's going to hide and be like, oh, no, I didn't cheat. Like, I feel like she's that girl that's, like, going to, like, be like, she's going to own it. She's like, yeah, I cheated. I wasn't happy. I needed to put myself first, and so I did this, and now I'm happy, and whatever. Like, I just feel like that's the kind of, like, girl she is. We then have like Gina and Emily confronting Tamara and basically, are you going to talk to Shannon? And, you know, they really encourage, you know, Tamara to be honest and open with Shannon, and they have that conversation. And as they're talking about Shannon, Shannon walks right into the conversation awkwardly. And so Tamara and Shannon have a little chat, and they basically like admit they both feel awkward and uncomfortable. While they say they're fine, they also say, we both miss each other. Tamara breaks down a little bit and says that life has been hard. She reveals that her dog Bronx died and that they closed Cut Fitness, and Shannon is shocked to learn this all. They decide to like, they're gonna get together to sit down and like hash out all of their issues, but they leave this thing on a good note. So the episode ends with that, and it's like to be continued. And the preview is basically like Shannon and Tamara preparing for the sit down of all sit downs next week. So we will have to wait and see for that to play out. But all in all, I thought this episode was pretty good and I really enjoyed it. I wasn't like, it wasn't like the most dramatic episode or the most like interesting episode, but it definitely wasn't boring. And I have hope. It gave me hope for this season. And yeah, I'm happy to see Tamara back. I still adore Heather Dubrow. I don't understand why Gina is on the show, but whatever. I really like the newbie, Jennifer. I think Emily is growing on me more and more. And Shannon's always great to have back in the mix. So she's fun, a little kooky. So I'm very excited for season 17 of The Real Housewives of Orange County. And I look forward to seeing how the drama plays out this season. Moving on to the Vanderpump Rules reunion recap. So, I sound thrilled right now. I found the reunion so exhausting, but so interesting. Like, I was literally so excited for it. So, yeah, part three of the reunion for Vanderpump Rules aired on Wednesday, and it did not disappoint. But it was literally a dumpster fire, like legit a dumpster fire. And I feel like part of me feels like the reunion just could have been two parts. And I feel like they could have cut out certain things like and kind of condensed it all. But I get for ratings and all three parts, you know, whatever. But yeah, I feel like it could have been condensed a tiny bit, but I still enjoyed every part of the reunion. Like, there was tea, there was scoop, there was drama. It was great. So all in all, but Raquel comes out on the reunion stage, and honestly, like, I kind of felt so bad for her. Like, she was literally like, obviously she's a Bambi-eyed bitch, but she was like a deer in headlights. Like, it was so bad. Like, her voice was shaking. Like, she could barely like conjugate a sentence. It was just horrible. And like, Ariana was going after her so hard, and obviously, well, like, deserved. Like, I am not, like, condemning Ariana at all, but it was just so ugly, and it made me have, like, a little bit of sympathy for Raquel, because, like, I feel like Sandoval, like, all of this should have been more pinpointed at Sandoval. Like, obviously, Raquel deserves criticism, and she deserves, like, to be called out for lying and, you know, manipulating and, like, the crazy things that she did throughout the season. But I just felt, I did feel bad for her. And I feel like I can't help but feel bad for her. And I don't know. And I hate that I feel bad for her, because I'm like, I shouldn't feel bad for her. But, like, it's just hard. And, you know, it's like Sandoval, he's the devil, and you know, he deserved so much of the hate. And I just, like, you know, he is like, he just sat there and defended himself while she was sitting there and apologizing, even though, like, I don't think, like, her emotions matched her words. Like, it just wasn't connecting. I don't know. I feel like that's like the case with her all the time. Like, obviously, like, she's out there like apologizing, but like, she's literally showing zero emotion. Like, there is just no emotion, and it's so weird. And like I get Raquel played a really big role in the affair, but like, Tom should have been getting the brunt of the hate because he was the one that was in a 9-year relationship. And like, yes, Raquel and Ariana were friends, and that is so wrong. But like, Tom goes after everyone and calls everyone out, and like, you know, he's just so gross, and like, he's just trash, like, literally. And like, I feel like Raquel was so manipulated by Tom that like, I think she just believed his lies and like, was just so easily like taken, and like, was like, oh, we're in love, we're this, we're that. And like, I honestly don't think Tom Sandoval loves Raquel, and clearly like, Raquel quickly, you know, admitted that she was in, that she's in love with Tom, and like, Tom then like stumbled and fumbled across his words to like finally admit that he loves Raquel. And like, he basically said like, I don't want to admit that I love Raquel because then that hurts Ariana. And it's like, no, you don't want to admit you love Raquel because you don't love her. Like, you basically just wanted a little plaything, and now she's attached and you don't know what the hell to do. Like, I feel like Tom Sandoval preyed on Raquel, and like, she's like, the girl is not smart. Like, she was fresh out of a relationship with James Kennedy, and that relationship was toxic in so many ways. And I feel like she was lost. He groomed her, he manipulated her, and like, she doesn't even realize it. Like, she's been fed all of these lies by him for probably, I'm gonna say over a year, and like, she didn't even realize how much their affair would affect everyone in the group, affect their lives. And like, it's just really sad to watch. And I think that like, you know, yeah, it's just, it was very difficult to watch in so many ways. And, you know, I don't know, like, I don't know if Raquel, like, I feel like she's a sociopath, but it's like, B, is she just really that dumb, or does she just like, I don't know. Again, or is she just that easily manipulated? It's very, very confusing to like understand. But yeah, so what was my takeaways? Oh, I loved how everyone, including Lisa Vanderpump, called out Raquel, like, having that conversation with Ariana about like her sex life with Tom, and how like, Ariana should like put more effort into it and all of that. Like, that was diabolical. Like, that conversation was diabolical. And the fact that like, thank God, like, Lisa admitted it and like acknowledged how awful it was, and like, that was like one of the most worst conversations I've ever seen on the show. Like, knowing what we know now while watching it, like, oh my God. Like, to know that like, one of your best friends is having a conversation with you about your long-term boyfriend and how you guys can improve your sex life and your intimacy while she is fucking him behind your back. Like, who does that? Who does that? And then Tom with the whole like, talking about like trying to shame Ariana because they had sex and she kept her top on. Like, what the fuck? Like, he is such scum. Like, who the fuck does that? Like, that is just so weird. And like, why does that like, and like, I laughed because on Watch What Happens Live, Lala Ken, Tamara Judd was like, I have sex with my shirt on all the time. Like, like, is that a problem? And like, Lala is like, that's like one of the sexiest things women can do, is like, keep their shirt on while they're having sex. Like, and I'm just like, what the actual fuck? Like, Tom Sandoval, like, he just gets scummier and scummier all the time. And so, basically, the reunion wraps up. Do we really learn anything else? I'm trying to think. I feel like there's so much, like, information processing in my brain. I don't know. I feel like we have, let me say. I'm trying to, like, remember right now. not the best time. Yeah, it's oh. One of the best moments was when Ariana told Raquel to go fuck herself with a cheese grater. Like, that made me fucking laugh. Ariana also said, she's like, you're disgusting and I wish nothing but the worst fucking shit that you could, that could ever happen to a person on you. And it's like, ooh. Like, I just like, she was so harsh, but like, it was justified and she had to get her anger out. So I get it. But like, then Tom Sandoval like was trying to justify their relationship again and saying like, it wasn't like, you know, we don't live life by logic. And like, it's like, no shit. But like, just because this relationship was illogical, and I mean, the affair was illogical, and like, you know, it doesn't mean that it justifies it. Like, you have a, I mean, Tom Sandoval probably doesn't have a conscience, so I don't know really what I'm saying there, but like, you know right from wrong. Like, that is something you learn as, like, what, a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old? Like, you learn right from wrong. Like, that's ingrained in you as a child. And I'm just like, what the hell? And, like, there were a lot of lies at the reunion, too, from Tom Sandoval, saying, like, him and Raquel only slept together once. I don't know why he was trying to peddle that bullshit, because it was like, dude, what the fuck are you talking about? You only slept together once? Like, uh-uh, that's a lie. And then he claimed that, like, his family never met Raquel and that they didn't spend any time together in St. Louis, which is where he's from. So there were just like so many like little lies, and it was so weird that like at this point in time, like, you just aren't just being open and honest. Like, why not just own it at this point? And we also found out that like it took Raquel I think it was 48 hours to text Ariana an apology after like the whole, like, after she found out about her affair with Tom Sandoval. And it was like, what the fuck? Like, and she didn't even really apologize. It was just like, I don't know what to say, I'm sorry. And it's like, that's not really an apology. Like, come on, show some remorse. And, like, literally, again, I just think that it makes no sense that, like, Raquel just has this, like, such lack of emotion. And I feel like Tom is, like, it's, like, deja vu. Like, I feel like all of these things that Tom's claiming, we've all heard before when he was breaking up with Kristen. So, the reunion was crazy. When it came to that big bombshell that was dropped, it actually didn't happen at the reunion. So at the reunion ends, they have their little like, I don't know, drink or whatever. And they pose for a photo, or I don't even think they had a drink this year. I think they just posed for a photo and it was like really awkward. And then everyone went their separate ways. So after the reunion filmed, 6 days later, Raquel sat down to film her last confessional of the season. And in that confessional, she's talking to producers. And that's when she like spills some tea about the truth about her and Tom's affair. And basically Raquel like admits that like Tom Sandoval lied at the reunion and he made her lie too, because he didn't want this information to come out to make their affair look even worse than it was. And like, she says he lied about them having a one-night stand in August after boys' night. She said that she and Tom actually hooked up multiple times while they were in Mexico for Sheena Shea's wedding. And so Sheena and her husband Brock got married at the end of August. And Tom Sandoval was on that trip for the wedding with his girlfriend Ariana. On that vacation, him and Raquel fucked multiple times. So Raquel says that like they first hooked up after that boys' night at the Mondrian that Sheena and Raquel crashed. So they first hooked up then in Mexico they hooked up for the second time and then continued to hook up while they were in Mexico. She explains that like Tom was drunk and trying to find his room, and she heard him in the hallway and like invited him into her room when I guess, you know, it went down. And you know how Tom at the reunion, he denied that him and Raquel ever hooked up inside the house that he owns with Ariana. Well, that was a lie too. And so they hooked up in the house, but to make matters even worse, they hooked up in the house while Ariana was back in Florida burying her grandmother at her grandmother's funeral. And it's just like so fucked up. Raquel explained, she said, "That's one story that we've agreed on getting straight, and I know the reason why Tom wanted to lie about it is because it looks really bad to hook up with someone's boyfriend in their own house when they're gone out of town, especially for a funeral of all things." Like, what the actual fuck? And okay, this interview was so weird too, because like Raquel's explaining, like she's like revealing all of this stuff, and she has like this big old fucking smile on her face. Like, it's so weird. Like, how do you have a smile on your face? Like, you are talking about horrible things that you did. Like, horrible, horrible things. How you hurt one of your closest friends. How you broke trust. How you helped a man, like, throw away a 9-year relationship. And, like, she's not to blame for Tom's actions at all. Like, Sandoval's actions. She's not to blame. But it's just so weird. Like, I just don't understand it. And I also want to mention that, oh, at the reunion, Raquel basically, like, when asked about, like, why she went after Schwartz, she basically claimed that, like, she's had a crush on Schwartz from day one and has always been interested in him. And it's like, girl, you met him when he was, like, engaged, like, about to be married. Like, what the fuck? Why would you have a crush on someone who's engaged and married? Like, it's not like it's like fucking Brad Pitt who's married and you have a crush on him. Like, this is someone in your friendship group. Like, what is wrong? Like, that's why I just don't understand this girl's mental state. Like, I think there is something seriously wrong with her. Like, what the hell? So then Raquel reveals that she asked Tom if Ariana would be interested in them being a throuple. And, like, Tom was like, no, no, she would not be into that. And it's like, why would you even think that? Like, oh, hi, Ariana. So, me and Tom have been having an affair. But, like, instead of, like, you guys breaking up, like, I think we should just be a throuple. Like, when would that be, like, something to ever suggest? When? Why? How? Like, what the fuck? What the hell? What the hell? It's so annoying. And like, she basically is like, I love Ariana as a person and I'm in love with Tom. So it didn't seem like such a far-fetched idea. And like, it's just like, it's so laughable at this point. But then she ends things and she's like, Tom's gonna kill me. But like, I just hate lying so much. And it's like, clearly Tom manipulated her and gaslighted her and like convinced her to lie for him and continue to lie for him because, you know, he knows that she's in love with him and he probably could give two shits about her and he's probably touring and fucking like multiple girls in every city that he goes to and probably could care less about her and is just keeping her strung along for season 11 of Vanderpump Rules so he can have a storyline and they can both try to redeem themselves. But in reality, he only cares about redeeming himself. So, okay, we're going to close the door on season 10 of Vanderpump Rules. I'm very excited for season 11. There's a lot of juicy gossip going around about the future of Vanderpump Rules and season 11 and possible spinoff shows and all of that, which I think I'm going to discuss tomorrow. There's a really good blind item by Dumois. And I hope that the blind item is true. So more on that tomorrow. But okay, let's move on to the daily dose of drama from Bravo that you need to know. Okay, for our first story, we have some tea about Real Housewives from New Jersey couple, Rachel and John Fuda. So Rachel and John Fuda's family drama exposed. Rachel Fuda may be known as a rat on the Real Housewives of New Jersey, but it seems that her and her husband John Fuda have a rat in their own life. Someone in Rachel and John's camp seems to have a major bone to pick with them because they are spilling all of their family secrets. So following part two of the Real Housewives of New Jersey season 13 reunion, a letter exposing their family's dirty laundry popped up on social media. I bet the Fudas will blame this on Louis Ruelas, right? Because it's always his fault. Right? Anything that comes out about their family, it's his fault. The letter that was posted originally by Melissa's old nose on Twitter, which that name, it's like chef's kiss, hilarious, so funny. The letter details the very scandalous family drama that the Fudas have going on. It also alleges that Rachel and John don't treat their employees very well at all. Yikes. This unidentified source claims that John does come from money, which we've heard rumors of, and, you know, the Fuda tile empire. We all know that John and Rachel, like, Fuda is not John's birth last name. So apparently Fuda is John's mother's, last name, like her, what is it called? Like, it's his, like, maternal grandparents last name. It's not his father's last name. And so I had like a little like brain fart right there, so sorry guys. But so yes, John Fuda was not born John Fuda. John Fuda's last name is not legally Fuda. I think he's since changed it, but that was not the name he grew up having. So but John Fuda's mom is part of the Fuda tile empire. And when John and Rachel got together, they wanted to have that last name because I guess it means a little something where they live in New Jersey. I don't know. I live in the other end of the state and I've never heard of Fuda tile, but whatever. And so they changed their last name to Fuda so that they could be connected to the Fuda tile empire. And it's just like, insert eye roll here. It's like so weird and strange and like whatever, but okay. So this source, you know, confirms that John comes for money, but the source alleges that John is happy to screw over the illegal immigrants he hires when it comes to their paycheck. The source also alleges John likes to fuck over people and he doesn't care. He's allegedly rude and treats most employees like dog shit on his heel. Apparently, Rachel isn't any better. So she apparently started out really nice, but then has since turned into her husband. Rachel is reportedly nasty and not caring, just like John. The letter goes on to break down some juicy allegations about Rachel's mom. So, apparently, allegedly, Rachel's mom has been engaged in numerous affairs over the years, and Rachel's parents are married. So her mother and father are married. Rachel's mother is allegedly involved currently in a 20-year-long affair with a man that the family refers to as Uncle Frank. So Rachel's mom and this guy, Frank, allegedly met at a bar. Rachel's mom then introduced Frank to her husband so they could become friends, but they allegedly fuck around all the time behind the husband's back. Apparently Rachel's family does not know about this affair, and if they ever did, shit will hit the fan. The source added that like the Rachel's family drama is like some Jerry Springer show shit, like, which makes me laugh because like I feel like, I don't know, the food has just come across as like trashy to me. I don't know why, but they just do. Like, I don't know, there's just like something that like I feel like they're a little trashy, a little like, but maybe I'm wrong. Who knows? I could like, I hate to say this because I don't really dislike the Fudas. I don't like the husband at all, but I don't dislike Rachel, but there are moments that I feel like she's just been like, I don't know, like, I feel like before starting to film season 13, she literally sat with Margaret Josephs and Melissa Gorga, and they literally like gave Rachel like the whole down low on like what to do, what to say, how to act, like all of these things. And I just, I don't know, there's something like inauthentic about the whole thing. But again, all of these claims are alleged. They're just rumors. They're gossip. Nothing is true or factual based at this point in time that we know about. perhaps down the line things will come to light, but we don't know. It's all alleged. She take it with a grain of salt, but it is very interesting and I think shed some light on the possible character that Rachel and her husband John Fuda have. So keep that in mind moving forward. For story number two, we're going to stay in the Garden State and discuss some shady shit that Melissa Gorga has been doing lately. So Melissa Gorga sells shady merch amid drama with Teresa Giudice. So we all know that Melissa Gorga pretends to be a nice, innocent girl. But in reality, she's one shady bitch, and her latest antics just prove that point even more. So Teresa and Melissa have been beefing for years, like literally, but amid their most recent drama at the Real Housewives of New Jersey season 13 reunion, Melissa is going lower than low. So after Tuesday's episode of Real Housewives of New Jersey, Melissa dropped some shady ass merch at her New Jersey based boutique Envy. On the Envy Instagram page, Melissa announced that there was some merch that Bravo fans could purchase. The items, which it comes in a blue hoodie and a black crew neck shirt, read, "I know you hate me, but just try and control yourself." And it also has like a pair of freshly glossed lips and Melissa's name underneath, because as we know, Melissa said this line at the start of the season 13 reunion last week, and she like said this at Teresa Giudice, and she said it while putting lip gloss on. So she's trying to basically have a moment, you know. We know Melissa loves to try to have a moment, and I have to give Melissa props when, you know, she deserves them. And this was a like good line. It was quippy. It was fun. It was shady. The whole putting on the lip gloss, it was a mood. So I will give her credit for that. But like, I feel like she sat in the mirror and she played that out numerous times. Like, I feel like she practiced that quite a bit. Like, yeah, she practiced that. And it's amazing how like so fast, within a week, she got merch out. Like, how did she know that that line was even going to air at the reunion? She got merch out fast. So, yeah. But I will give her props for the good line. She doesn't come up with many. And, you know, she deserves credit when credit's due. So, the items, the black crew neck and the blue hoodie, are sold out, not surprisingly. They were going for $55 each. And while that is like shady merch, it's like, there's a little shade there. It's, you know, but it's cute. And I feel like Melissa was really like, she saw how much money the Vanderpump Rules cast has recently made off of their merchandise. I think like what Ariana Madix and like, what is her name? Katie Maloney made like, what, $500,000 or something from their like, something about her merch or something. And Lala Ken is killing it in the merch department. Like, she said like that merch helped her buy her like $1 million Palm Springs house. So like the merch is doing things for these Bravo Lebs, and I think Melissa really wanted to jump on that bandwagon. But where it takes a turn into the lower than low direction is Melissa also announced that she was selling handcuff bracelets. So another post on the Envy Instagram page shows that Melissa is selling these handcuff bracelets, and it is just like so shocking that she's actually doing that. And in the post, she was playing the song Locked Up by Akon, which is just like trashier than trash, like ugh. And like we know that this is all geared at Teresa Giudice. Like, it's clear as day, because during part two of the reunion, Melissa told Teresa, she's like, "Teresa, we didn't commit mortgage fraud. You did, dollface." And like Teresa's, and the crimes that like Teresa and her husband Joe Giudice went to jail for were discussed. It was a hot topic. It's been all over social media. It's been all over the press. It's been everywhere. And honestly, like we all know, like remember during the season, was it season 5 or season 6? whatever the one with the like twins, like Teresa and whatever. I don't even know what her sister, other sister's name was. The twins, and the one twin goes clink, clink. Like, that was a moment. And like, we all knew how much that hurt Teresa and how like offended she was and like upset and all. And like, so we know that Melissa's little handcuff bracelet thing is a dig at Teresa, and it's just so low class. And clearly the Gorgas will do anything to make money. And once again, they're trying to profit off of Teresa. It's not a cute look. It's so low class. It's just trashy, trashy, trashy. Like, so trashy. Like, I can look past the whole, like, merchandise thing. Like, the whole sweatshirts and all. Like, I'm like, that's cute. Like, whatever. I feel like every housewife sells, like, stuff with their iconic, lines on it. And this is the really only iconic line Melissa's ever really have, besides like, thank you, Jesus. And I mean, I think that's really it. So two lines in 10 years on The Real Housewives of New Jersey. I mean, she's gotta make the money where she's gotta make the money, and she's gotta make the merch when she has an iconic line, and they're far and few between at this point. So, you know, I can't blame her for that. But the whole handcuff bracelet thing, that is just trashy, trashy, trashy. Low class, like, ugh, so horrible. Yeah, so just ugly of Melissa. Don't like it. Not a fan. Next up, we have Tamra Judd calling Teresa Giudice the most overrated housewife ever. So Tamra appeared on Wednesday's episode of Watch What Happens Live, where she played a game of truth or Tamra gets naked wasted. So Angie Cohen asked Tamra to name the most overrated housewife of all time. Naturally, Tamra didn't hesitate and said Teresa Giudice. She didn't elaborate on why, but it's no secret that Teresa and Tamra have been feuding for quite a while. Andy did look shocked by the answer, so that is something important to know. But Teresa and Tamra never had any issues. And then, I guess when Tamra was recapping Real Housewives of New Jersey on her and Teddy Mellencamp's Two Teas in a Pod podcast, Tamra said some not so nice things about Louis Roulas, which Teresa caught wind of and wasn't happy about. And it seems from the comments that Tamra makes on the podcast and in the press, she's very team Melissa, and Melissa is her bestie. And so, of course, because of that, Tamra is gonna, you know, be shady towards Teresa and make snide comments about her and her husband. And since then, the two have basically engaged in a podcast media war. So, you know, Teresa has like gone on her podcast and like called out Tamra and like said like their podcast is nasty and mean spirited. And, you know, Tamra has clapped back and talked about how successful their podcast is, and that like Teresa wishes she could have a podcast as successful as theirs, and whatever. They go back and forth. So they literally like can't stand each other at this point. And it all stemmed from Tamra opening up her big mouth and being the mean girl that we know and love her to be. I mean, let's not get it twisted. I really like Tamra. I think she's a great housewife, but we know she can be a mean girl and she can cross the line very easily. Like, it's a fine line for Tamra, and she often crosses it in the wrong direction. But Tamra didn't end there. So while she moved away from talking about Teresa, she did share which former Real Housewives of Orange County co-stars are the most and the least iconic when she was given the choice between three former co-stars. So Andy asked her, out of Gina Keough, Alexis Bledel, and Gretchen Rossi, which is the most iconic and which is the least iconic? So Tamra said that Gina is the most iconic because she was an OG, which props, totally agree with Tamra on that one. She then says Alexis falls somewhere in the middle, and then Gretchen is the least iconic. And she didn't even say Gretchen's name. She was like, what's that other girl's name? Like, being shady as fuck. And I don't know. I yearn for the days of like Gretchen, Alexis, Tamara, even Gina and Vicky Hall being on The Real Housewives of Orange County again. Like, those were the good old days. Like, do you remember those days of Orange County? Like, those seasons were so good and so dramatic and so shitty, but still so fun. And, ugh, I love old Orange County. Like, just one of the best franchises in the, like, those, like, what, first, like, 10, 11 seasons. Ugh, so, so good. So good. Ugh, I yearn for those days. I long for them. Maybe one day Bravo will answer our prayers and give us back that, like, iconic cast. Like, give me, I need, like, Shannon. I need Heather. I could even throw Emily in it. I need Vicky. I need Tamara. I need Alexis. I need Gretchen. Like, make it happen. Make it work. It would be incredible. I'd love it. For our fourth story, we're going to talk about some beef that is going on between Tom Sandoval and Tom Schwartz. So all is not well in the world of Schwartz and Sandoval. Tom Schwartz blasts Tom Sandoval, reveals they aren't speaking. So Tom Schwartz appeared on Jax and Brittany's podcast, When Reality Hits, this week, and he had a lot to say about his bestie Tom Sandoval, and he didn't hold back. So Schwartz admitted that Tom made a big mess and he left it for everyone else to clean up. He admits that he's resentful and is taking a break from Tom at the moment, which is shocking. I honestly never thought I would hear those words coming out of Schwartz's mouth. Schwartz, he agreed that Tom Sandoval took advantage of his kindness, and he admits that he feels used by his best friend. He says he exploited him, and that, like, while he was a confidant of Tom's, he did not sign up to be a co-conspirator in Sandoval's vile scheme when it came to his affair with Raquel Leviss. Schwartz says that Sandoval basically sold him a bill of goods when it came to his, like, dwindling relationship with Ariana Maddox. Sandoval basically told Schwartz that, like, Ariana treated him like shit and belittled him, and that they had no intimacy, and that they were basically glorified roommates. And, you know, so Schwartz says he believed his best friend. Like, he didn't think Tom was lying to him, but turns out he was. And, you know, while he, you know, puts a lot of the blame on Sandoval, Schwartz is also taking, you know, accountability for his own actions and admits that he was too complacent and that he should have pressed Sandoval more about the affair. Schwartz does say that Sandoval regrets the affair, but he does call out Tom's ego and questions why Sandoval is out on tour instead of, like, doing the work to, like, recover from this scandal and, like, make himself a better person. Like, he says that it looks really bad for Sandoval and that it looks like he doesn't give a fuck and, like, he's just living out his quote-unquote rock star dreams. And, you know, he says he'd like to see Sandoval take some accountability for his action. And, you know, he knows that Tom is itching to tell more about his side of the whole affair and everything. But he really just needs to, like, let his ego go. And, you know, he doesn't really understand that at this point his opinion doesn't matter. Like, his side of the story doesn't matter. Like, Tom just needs to, like, show humility, apologize, and, like, really mean his apology and not say, I'm sorry, but, and give an excuse after an excuse. He just needs to own it and say, like, look, I'm really sorry. This is heartfelt. You know, I am, like, putting my ego to the side. I'm, you know, ready to take on all of the hurt and anger that people are going to throw at me, and I'm going to become a better person. But, like, Tom just doesn't know that or Swartz doesn't know that Sandoval can actually do that. So it's really crazy. Yeah, I'm like so shocked that Swartz is like saying all of this, but I'm proud of him and I give him kudos. And I think that Swartz has lived in Tom Sandoval's shadow for so long. And I think that Tom Swartz put Sandoval on this pedestal and he like, you know, looked up to him and he believed him and he supported him. And he, you know, just was like, you know, went along with anything he said and did. And I think that Swartz is finally seeing Sandoval without the rose-colored glasses on and maybe seeing what everyone else is. And I think that Tom probably, I think Swartz, I keep saying Tom and they're both named Tom, like what the hell, Lara, you know, I keep forgetting, I'm like, they're both named Tom, like stop referring to them as Tom because no one knows who you're talking about them. But I think that Swartz is finally seeing the error of his ways, and I think he might have some major regrets about putting Sandoval ahead of everyone else in his life for so long, including his now ex-wife Katie Maloney. So I want to finish listening to the rest of the podcast to find out what else Swartz had to say. So maybe we'll do a follow-up little story on this tomorrow, but I definitely suggest listening to this episode of Jackson Brittany's podcast. And you know, I think Swartz is gonna separate himself even more from Sandoval despite them being business partners. And I think that Swartz honestly needs to look out for himself now and make sure that his career and his life and his friendships are, you know, put first and his feelings towards Sandoval are put second. I mean, Tom clearly doesn't care about what he did, so why should Swartz care about him and how he's doing and all of that? I think Swartz just needs to focus on making sure that Swartz and Sandy is a successful business, making sure Tom continues, and going off and doing other ventures without Tom Sandoval. So I'm looking forward to see how their friendship plays out in season 11 and what's to come. But definitely check out Jax and Brittany's podcast, and we'll follow up with more info on this story tomorrow. For our final story, we are going to discuss some more Real Housewives of New Jersey tea, because why not at this point? I feel like this whole episode is Real Housewives of New Jersey heavy, and I feel like it's just going to be that way for the next 2 weeks because Jersey is hot, hot, hot at the moment, and it has been for the last few months. Hopefully after next week, it'll die down a little bit and we'll be able to refocus on other franchises and other news. But for the time being, let's dive into this last story. Jacqueline Laurita calls out Melissa Gorga for reading 2-year-old texts at reunion. So as we know, during part 2 of the reunion, Melissa Gorga read a text message that Jacqueline Laurita sent to Jackie Goldschneider 2 years ago about Teresa Giudice. The text was vicious. It like bashed Teresa Giudice up and down. Not nice things were said. But at the end of the day, Teresa wasn't fazed by it because, like, she knew it was sent way before her and Jacqueline reconciled in November of 2022. And Teresa admits, she's like, look, I said nasty things about Jacqueline when we weren't friends. Like, we both said nasty things about each other when we were not friends the last so many years. So whatever, I'm not going to get mad about something that was said when we weren't friends and we weren't in a good place. So whatever. So Teresa just let it roll off her back. She's not bothered by it. But Jackie Goldschneider gave the text to Melissa to read at the reunion in hopes of it causing, because Melissa, Margaret, and everyone is hoping that the text message would cause a, you know, fracture in Teresa and Jacqueline's newly mended friendship. But Jacqueline Laurita, she is calling Melissa out for her antics, and she commented on the Taste of Reality Instagram page and basically said the text was so irrelevant. She quote unquote said, a 2-year-old text, it's no secret that we've said a lot of horrible things about each other. We've both publicly and privately when we hated each other. So has Melissa. So I'm not sure why she is highlighting something she has said herself, and she's family. Jackie too. I'm so happy Truce and I have resolved things since then and are back to being Lucy and Ethel for life, like we always should have been. Can't wait for you to come visit in California, Teresa, off camera. So Jacqueline's basically saying, like, me and Teresa both admit that we've said nasty things to each other, but she's also pointing out that Jackie Goldschneider and Melissa Gorga have said equally, if not more, nasty things about Teresa on camera and off camera. And Melissa's family, so she should be even more ashamed of herself. It's great to see that Teresa and Jacqueline are going to continue their friendship off camera, away from prying eyes, and really rebuild their bond, because they really did have such a great friendship. It was one of the most epic friendships in Housewives history, and I'm great to see it back in action and back on track. I'd love to see it pop up on Real Housewives of New Jersey. I don't think that's going to happen, because I know Jacqueline has no interest in filming for Real Housewives. She doesn't want anything to do with it. But I love that she's calling out Melissa for reading an irrelevant text that literally plays no role in the present moment at all. Like, it doesn't change anything. Like, it doesn't, and it's really hilarious because Melissa is always the one that's telling Teresa to let things go in the past and move on and all this, but she's bringing up something that is so far in the past and hoping that it'll affect the present day. It's just, I can't, the hypocrisy of it all. But I'm glad that Jacqueline is commenting and letting people know what she has to say about all of this, since she was inadvertently dragged into the drama at the Real Housewives of New Jersey reunion. And, you know, sad thing is, she's not even getting paycheck for it. Like, she's being dragged into the drama and has really nothing to do with any of it. So, but glad to see Jacqueline speaking out. And I'm even more glad that Jacqueline and Teresa aren't letting Melissa's antics affect their friendship at all, which is fabulous. Thank you guys so much for listening to the Reality Deets Daily Dose of Drama podcast. I so appreciate it. If you guys want more Real Housewives and Bravo news, check out the Reality Deets Instagram page, and also check out Reality Deets on TikTok, where we post a bunch of videos and fun little things. So check us out. If you want to follow me, Lara Sophia, on Instagram, my handle is at Lara Sophia. I'd love to hear from you guys. And please make sure to rate, comment, and subscribe to the podcast. I'd love to hear your thoughts and opinions and anything that I can change up or do better or whatever. Always looking to improve. Thank you guys again so much for listening. I will talk to you tomorrow. Bye.